Whether you're a seasoned business leader or just starting out on your entrepreneurial journey, you'll have questions around how to navigate the complex and ever-changing business landscape. In Zuwani's At The Lake sessions, we discuss thought-provoking topics, exploring practical ways to align our day-to-day business activities with God's plans and purposes.
Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Well, welcome everybody. It's wonderful to have all of you joining us. So just to sort of dive straight in and give you a little bit of insight again into Zuwani and the why behind Zuwani. We really do believe as business leaders that we have the power to shape the marketplace. And through that, we also then have the power to shape society. But we want to shape it with biblical principles and bring those biblical principles into our business practices, because we believe that God really does have the answers for how we should be unlocking a flourishing of people, place, and planet. And so that is why we created Zuwani, or Zuwani was birthed, it was birthed out of a collective of people that have a similar desire. And so the name Zuwani actually means at the lake in Swahili. And the whole idea behind the name is that we want Zuwani to be or symbolize a place of gathering where, as business leaders, we can come together, we can tell stories, we can share stories. We can find strength in the power of being together and actually sharing these stories and testimonies, get courage from one another, and then go out into the world to restore things that have been broken. And we know that our world and our continent isn't perfect, but that we are on this journey with God in redeeming the parts that we can on the side of eternity. And so it's been really exciting just seeing some of the growth that's been happening within the Zuwani community as more and more business leaders who already have this passion and desire, have this real heart for our continent and heart for what God is wanting to do and is busy doing and has been doing for many years on our continent, coming together in community and just really sharing with one another, learning from one another and going deeper together, grappling with tough topics. So that together we can truly make a difference and see God's kingdom come on earth. And so this idea of At The Lake was actually birthed that I launched 2 years ago. So for those of you that have been on this journey, I can't believe it's been 2 years now, or maybe only 2 years. It actually feels like a lot longer than we've been meeting and coming together in community. But we had a really robust panel discussion around cultural diversity at the launch of our Zuwani, sort of the birth of Zuwani, I suppose, if you want to call it that. And one of our advisory panel members, Champ Takiso, said, I want to encourage you to have more of these robust discussions where we can have a safe space, where together we can chat through these things and actually really grapple with topics. And so the panel discussion kept saying, we need to go back to the lake and have these discussions and be at the lake and have these discussions. And that's where this concept was birthed, is that the idea with this is that we come together at the lake, even though it's virtual. Hopefully we can do these things in person sometime too, but that we can come together at our virtual lake and we can have some really tough conversations and just grapple with things at a different depth. So this is our fifth At The Lake session. And today we're going to be tackling the topic of justice through business. And so that is a tough topic to be diving into. I think sometimes we want to separate justice and business. We want to think about them as totally separate entities. But the reality is that where we live on our continent, we have so much inequality, we have so much injustices that are happening. And as business leaders, if we're going to be pioneering and driving and shaping the narrative of our continent going forward, we have a huge role to play in actually bringing just practices into the way that we do businesses and business. And so we really want to have this discussion today. I encourage our panel who is going to be taking us on this journey to debate with one another. Disagree if you don't agree with the other person's perspective. Let's really chat these things through, because it's not an easy topic. It's complex. And for those of you that are listening on this call, please type in the chat function. We want to hear from you. We want you to challenge some of the things that we say, and we want you to ask good questions. And at the end of this, we might not have the answers, but it means that we can continue the conversation. We can take those questions, we can take those sticking points, And we can maybe start groups that actually start trying to understand some of these concepts better if necessary. And so I'm really excited about the discussion that we're going to have today. We have a continent that's complex. We have seven countries within our continent, the seven top and most unequal societies in the world. But there's hope, but God, but the fact that we have the most Christians in the world sitting on our continent, how incredible is that? And surely as believers, we need to be having these discussions so that we can actually do things differently and so that we can shape the face of business differently, where we are acting in a way that brings justice into the societies that we are part of shaping. And so with, I think I don't need to unpack any more what today's topic is about. I'm going to hand over to our esteemed panel, and we've got our host for the day, which is Sib Sibanda. Sibs is currently sitting in Zimbabwe, and Sibs is passionate about numerous possibilities for gospel renewal in society through the intentional integration of faith and work. And Sibs has been doing this integration of faith and work for many, many years. It's something that I know Sibs is really passionate about. We've had multiple conversations, done multiple things together around this topic, and I really do respect Sibs's just depth of knowledge around how to integrate these two worlds. Sibs is running an IT company in Harare that does use a lot of his time, or devotes a lot of his time, to pursue this idea of integrating faith and work. So Sibs will be in conversation with our panel guests, exploring the topic of justice through business. And I'm going to hand over to Sibs to do the rest of the introducing of our esteemed panel. Thank you, Sibs.
Thank you, Kerry. And good morning to all of you. And thank you for taking the time to join us this morning. And we will have a time of Q&A after the panel discussion. So as we go along, please do feel free to type in your questions in the chat. I'd like to start by introducing our panel, which has representatives from three African countries. So Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa. So from Kenya, we have Cynthia Nyamai, who's not only a PR executive, but an acclaimed journalist, being the first Kenyan to be awarded the Best Upcoming Business Journalist in Africa by the Diageo Business Awards. She currently is a freelance writer for Forbes Magazine Africa and the Grasso Michelle Media Platform. And from Nigeria, we have Yemi Fashun, the Chief Talent Officer at YF Talent Partners. And it must be said that talent is not something that he's short of. With a professional career spanning nearly 30 years, Yemi has left his mark in HR, strategic change management, service delivery, organizational design and development. He also is a faculty member of the Lagos Business School and the Rome Business School, and sits on several advisory boards, including the Institute for Work and Family Integration. And last, but by no means least, from South Africa, we have Olefile Sammy Rabolele, who is the co-founder of and CEO of Beyond the Eyes Network, an independent film company that specializes in telling African stories, the greatest African stories that have never been told. His role is in developing an ecosystem that ensures that they can make films sustainably. So to our panel, welcome to you all, and thank you for taking the time to share your wisdom and experience with us this morning. Now, it's no secret that the word justice stirs a lot of passion and a lot of emotion, but equally true is that quite often we're not all talking about the same thing. And with that in mind, I'd like to set the context for our use of the word in today's topic, which is justice through business, opportunities and challenges. Now, broadly speaking, justice is a term that is used to describe what is right or things as they should be. And biblically speaking, it's very linked to this idea of God's righteousness, both of which are said to be the foundation of his throne in Psalm 89, verse 14. Now, researchers on the subject of justice recognize four categories of justice. First is distributive justice. which is concerned with equitable access to resources, then procedural justice, which is concerned with fair and impartial treatment, restorative justice, which is concerned with returning what was wrongfully taken, and retributive justice, which is concerned with punishment for wrongdoing. So although our discussion may touch on all of these, our focus as business leaders will be on distributive justice, also referred to as economic justice, which, as I've just mentioned, is primarily concerned with equitable access to resources. In other words, we'd like to drill down this morning on how a redemptive approach to business can be a vehicle through which every member of society can flourish. And so in line with this objective, I'm going to throw out my first question, which will be to all of our panelists, and it will also give us an opportunity to get to know you a little bit better. And the premise of the question is that most people don't go into business with the pursuit of justice at the forefront of their minds. Normally that happens along the way. The first question, and I'll start with you, Cynthia, is can you tell us very briefly when and how you came to realize that your business could be a vehicle for promoting justice in society? Was there a specific turning point? Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you. I wish, Sibs, I knew this from the beginning, but when I was starting my business, because later on when I realized so much about who God has called me to be, it felt like so much time has been lost. And that's why I'm so excited about today's discussion. But mine was a journey of finding myself and finding my purpose. And I started my PR company. I used to work in media, still do, but I left and started my PR company because I realized there was a gap in communications. And I thought, this is my purpose, this is my only gift. And so I left, started, and very quickly got into political campaigns, presidential campaigns, and the business was successful within a very, very short time. And I moved from countries to countries. I've worked with different governments when they win their elections. We never lost an election, always won. And every time we would win, a country would ask me to stay behind. And so this time we won the Ugandan elections. I was asked to stay behind. I agreed, and I started working with the Uganda police. And unfortunately, what happened was that the head of police was having issues with the president. It ended up being such a public thing. I was working with the head of police under him, and you know, he got arrested. Everyone in my office got arrested. It was such a public thing. But I wasn't arrested. God really, I saw the hand of God. And when everything was now being taken away, our security was taken away, I was embarrassed and public shamed, put in newspapers and everything. I began to ask myself questions, and I noticed that 1 year prior all this, I was so unhappy. I had everything. People would invite me for interviews. It looked like I was so successful, but I would go back home and really cry. And this gave me an opportunity as I was waiting for my arrest. We used to be arrested at night, and everyone had their own day. So every night I would be, I'd sleep dressed waiting for my arrest. And so I wouldn't sleep because I didn't want to be arrested in a surprising way. I wanted to be prepared. And I started asking God questions. Why did you bring me here? Why do I work with governments? Why would you put me to work in a place that has so much corruption? And by trying to do the right thing, I am now paying a very heavy price. And that's where my journey with God started and my relationship with him deepened. I was born again, but I didn't have a relationship with God. I was religious. I'd just pray, go to church, and so on. But I started a deep relationship with God of prayer and fasting. And then he taught me my purpose. And my purpose comes from Jeremiah 1:10, where now I began to understand that, yes, God has called me for the nations, but God has called me to uproot the systems of the nations, systems that... And that's why I would really bash heads in different governments I'd work in. But I always left a new system. I'd not realized it's my purpose. And my calling is to uproot systems that do not bring justice to the world and put in godly systems. So I changed my business model. And even now when I work with clients who are still a lot of government clients, I still have Jeremiah 1:9-10 at the back of my mind, and that helps me make decisions every single day. So in a short way, that's just what my journey has looked like.
Thank you, Cynthia. And what I love about what you're saying, we had a foundations course, which is Ziwani's sort of Faith and Work 101 course, and I was just talking about how sometimes as Christians, we, because of our dualistic thinking, we think when we think about God using people, we're looking at people who are prophesying at church or yes, preaching and teaching, and we say, oh, why doesn't God use me? Often forgetting that the place of our work is one of the primary places that God uses us for his kingdom. Thanks so much for sharing that. Yemi, same question to you.
Thanks very much. And good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, for wherever you're listening from. So I guess since I'm probably the youngest entrepreneur member of the panel, started my business just about 18 months ago. But yeah, my career spanned about 29, 30 years within an 8-to-5 situation. So let me also say, like Cynthia said, there was no, I can't even say there was any real experience that jolted me. But mine has been a case of line upon line, precept upon precept. So grew up in a very harsh, narrow Christian way, I must say. So everything has been about the fear of God. So going through school, going through my career journey, I mean, there were some organizations I had in mind to say I would never work there because I didn't find that they were doing business with justice from a fear of God perspective. So that guided my action, guided my career. And when I was going to start business as well, about 18 months ago, sincerely, I must tell you that my transition from an 8-to-5 that ended on a Friday, and then the entrepreneurship starting on a Tuesday was so seamless. I could see the hand of God in everything about that transition. And that is the guiding principle around me, like I said, from growing up in a harsh, narrow Christian way throughout my career. So it's been one step after another with understanding the fact that there is a purpose behind being here. So whether I was an 8-to-5 or an entrepreneur now, whatever I do, that purpose is always behind me, driving everything that I do. It's not about me, it's about God. Basically, that's it for me.
Thank you, Yemi. We look forward to hearing more of your stories as we carry on in the discussion. Sammy, thank you. Same question.
Yeah, thanks, Sibs. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, so mine is a bit probably different just because I actually, after graduating at the University of Pretoria in finance, investment management, really wanted, I had come to know Jesus because of a ministry on campus where someone just spent a lot of time with me and shared their life with me. And so I decided that I want to do that with other young people. So that got a hold of my heart. But I quickly came to realize there's a challenge. It's easier to really live out your faith on the campus because it's like a greenhouse effect, right? Like, and so a lot of the guys that I had begun to disciple and now were going out into the law field or into the engineering field, we're like, it's really tough out here, Sam, you know, and our ability to prepare people for post-varsity in the faith and workspace was very difficult, especially if you had not been out there. So after a while, I went in to go work myself. So I became a management consultant and investment analyst for a little bit. But I think given maybe just the way God had made me. I'm a son of a farmer. The pioneering bone had always been in me. So it wasn't long before I wanted to start something on my own. But the journey of being in management consulting and working and starting to feel it for myself started to make me realize how difficult it is to actually live out your faith in the workspace, right? And then the biggest way, given my experience from being on the campus as well and being a campus minister in truth, is that, you know, the idea of living out your faith is an important thing. It's a core thing for who I am. And so the biggest, I really looked, I love movies, but then I also looked, it's one of the spaces that really goes untouched by Christian communities, right? Like if someone is a Christian in that space, they generally don't talk about it a lot, or they struggle in both spaces. They struggle in the creative space as a Christian, and they struggle at church as a Christian, you know, so because everybody judges from both sides, right? Like when they go to church, it's like, oh, yeah, you guys, like, what sort of work are you doing, you know? And then when they go into the creative space, it's like, oh, you guys are the Christian guys. So it's like they're not winning either way. And so we wanted to say, but stories are so core to how to change mindsets and shift societies. And so my friend and I decided, listen, we're going to do this. And if we're going to do this, we have to do this in that space where we feel passionate and called, and but also believe that if you can really change it and find a way to make a mark in it, it does actually make a big mark. And so we launched a business in it. Yeah, we'll talk more and more about like what are the learnings that we've had and how we find that it is a great space for actually moving the needle forward on the justice and society space. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Sammy. So Yemiya, I'll address the next question to you. So someone might be listening to this and thinking, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about business ethics, and I work for a big corporate, and ethics is a big thing for them too. But understood clearly, biblical justice goes way beyond ethics. But the question is how? What's the difference between ethics and what we're talking about this morning, which is biblical justice?
Thanks, Ibs. The more I think about the question, the more I want to make allusion to a story in the Bible. We're all familiar with that. And that's the story of Joseph. Joseph going through his ordeals and eventually landing the CEO of Egypt job, if you know what I mean. And there was a time when there was famine in the world, and the only safe place around the world was Egypt, right? And in charge of the resources at that moment in time was Joseph. The business philosophy around that, and I'm using business in a sense now, we know it was Egypt, but the business philosophy around that was not to make profit at all costs. The underlying principle around it was to be a blessing to the entire world. The entire world came to Egypt because there was famine all over the world. Now, think about another entrepreneur without that justice from the perspective of God in mind. That was an opportunity to cash out, like we say in this part of the world. That was an opportunity to blow, an opportunity to be in the Forbes Council to compete with the Dangote and all the global, you know what I mean? But that wasn't the focus. The focus was, let's make humanity thrive. And everyone came to that point. So if we're going to look at it from that perspective, I see every business as an ecosystem where people should thrive and get justice, be treated fairly. So it's a higher purpose vision rather than focusing on just money. And I found out that when purpose is higher than money, eventually money follows, right? But when the focus is just on money, let's make the as much as possible and all that. If you look at history of such organizations, you probably will see that sustainability was a challenge. But when there is a higher purpose driven by God around whatever we do, that grab always opportunities to make more than money, but impact lives and change society. So I always go back to the experience of Joseph. There was an opportunity for him at that moment to become the richest man in the world by thinking just profit, just money. But beyond all of that, he was thinking people. He was thinking survival of the world. And that made him a good man from a biblical justice perspective as an example for me.
Very good. Thank you, Yemi. I was just thinking as you were sharing that, and just thinking about how ethics can be culturally conditioned as well. So if you go into a community and you ask a child what's right and what's wrong, a lot of how they view that is conditioned by the culture and the society around them. It's not necessarily rooted in a biblical narrative. And I think, Sammy, this is where your world comes in, where I think it a lot depends on the story that we're living out of. And so if we're talking about biblical justice, on what basis, so if we're talking about economic justice, on what basis should there be equitable access unless people are equal? But where do you get that understanding of people being equal? And touching on your point, Femi, as well with Joseph's story, unless we understand that it's God's purpose to for people to flourish and fill the earth and subdue the earth, again, that may not be a priority for us, or we may not understand biblical justice. We may not understand justice in that context. I wonder if either one of you want to pick up on that idea, just again, drilling into that question of what is the difference between ethics and what we're talking about?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is very, very vital. It's ethics probably, again, ethics takes us quite a long way, but it also in itself draws from this idea of biblical justice. So it's not actually outside of the realm of biblical justice, in the sense of something that is ethical is placed on the foundation of the idea of biblical justice. And what I mean is the Judeo-Christian worldview gives birth to a lot of what we call ethical in today's day and age. So our legal system is based on a Judeo-Christian worldview. The ideas of how we have seen hospitals come about, or even that idea that we care for people, is born on top of the foundation of a Judeo-Christian worldview. So even ethics in itself, it's just that it stops short, and sometimes its roots also stop short of actually crediting where they actually get their roots, if that makes sense. And so us as Christians, then it is our duty to connect dots for people, you know, help people connect the dots to say, if you stop there, you fail. You know, it's exactly what you're saying, Sips, about why is the human life valuable? Well, you know, we know it's valuable, and ethics assumes that human life is valuable and people are valuable, but it doesn't want to go to the core of why that is valuable. And it's the job of the Christian in every space to sort of connect that dot. Because if you connect those dots, then the biblical justice narrative actually takes root and gives fruit in those spaces.
Very good. Thank you, Sammy. And just carrying on, I guess, with this idea of earthing our understanding of justice in the biblical narrative, Cynthia, I'll direct this at you. Jesus says in Matthew 22, 37, that the greatest commandment is to love God with all of our hearts, and mind and soul and strength and everything that we have, but also to love our neighbor as ourselves. So in the context of economic justice, how can business be a vehicle to do just that, especially amongst the marginalized in society?
I think in the verse, something interesting that you said, that sometimes we can quickly forget is, as you love yourself. And so we are required to also love ourselves. We are required because we cannot give people what we do not have. And one of the things as leaders and business owners is really to take time and to understand ourselves, our call, to love ourselves and understand why we are on earth. And one of the things that I always now ask, because I work on campaigns with leaders, is, have you taken that personal journey to know yourself? Have you taken that personal journey to also heal? And it begins to change their perspective. In fact, some of them, it broadens the assignment that they thought they had on earth, and you begin to see that you actually have a higher calling, that it's not just about you. The beautiful thing is when you begin to love yourself, you truly understand that life is not about you, and what you're doing is not about you. It is about service to others. It is about rolling out a dimension of God that you carry for others to enjoy. And so you will begin to see, I see with my clients, and a lot of them just come for branding. But once we take up that exercise, and people think branding should just be what clothes should I wear, what colors should I begin to have. But when I take them through that exercise, including politicians, they begin to say, I think I need to go back and change a few things in my business. I also had to change my business and my business model with even small examples. Like, for example, I now tithe a certain percentage of the business to even tithe for those who do not want to tithe. I reduce the working hours. And also within the business, we bring in people who might not be able to afford our services at a much cheaper rate, and even for others, free of charge. And as I am working with the various business leaders, I also ask them, we have a client who might not be able to afford your services. So our business has become a linkage point for people who have the means to transfer to others who don't have the means. And one of the things that I've also come to realize that because I have a voice, I still work in media and I do various shows on business entrepreneurship. I begin to bring in other angles and business angles and story angles that people are not comfortable with. Justice is one of them, and have an open discussion. And sometimes people actually don't have an understanding of how the world can look like if there was justice, if business was not just about making profit, and we want to make sure everyone around us is also enjoying the same successes that we are enjoying. So I have come to realize that it has to begin with the individual first, and then now spread it to the rest of the society. And that is what every single day I have decided to make a decision, to make decisions based on these principles at the back of my mind, and to also educate others on the same.
I love that. Great example, Cynthia. Thank you for that. I was just thinking, guys, about that word neighbor. Remember, Jesus was asked, yeah, who is my neighbor? And I remember talking to a church leader, and there was a time, and this was in Johannesburg, where it was very in vogue to talk about love for the city. And I said to him, what part of the city are you talking about? You know, because it was a very monocultural church. And so the interpretation, how we interpret scripture, has a lot to do with how we understand what Jesus is saying. And so when he says neighbor, and we just look around and we say, okay, well, my neighbors are people like me. Within the context of justice in society and business as a vehicle towards that, how should we be thinking about our neighbors? Because typically we're not rubbing shoulders with, say, the marginalized and so on. And how should we be thinking about that? And what are some of the practical ways that you guys use to, I guess, find or engage neighbors who you wouldn't typically think were your neighbors?
So first, I think how businesses, the one vehicle, one of the vehicles that God has given us, I guess, to really be able to fight injustice on a big scale, you know. So in the sense, you know, we're all called to make disciples, you know, in the spaces where God puts us. But businesses has a great opportunity to be a lever, in the sense that it can actually make a massive impact in society, in undoing sometimes things that are put, or systemic injustices that were put in by businesses or organisms of that level, if that makes sense. So to almost undo, you need something of the same size to make a big change. You yourself need to make disciples, but a business can actually be a bigger lever that can afford you to move structural challenges. And so how are we doing it? For instance, in our space, we find that storytelling requires a lot of research, you know, so for you to actually be honest and faithfully tell the story of the neighbor. I always tell with our team, we always say, you know, first things first, it's important to look for ways that God has been working within a group of people or a group or a space before you actually assume that you come with a solution, you know, because God is always at work, you know. So I like telling this story about the, so I'm Tswana, the people I come from, we speak Tswana, you know, Botswana, the country, but I'm Tswana from South Africa. But the main point is our word for neighbor, because we're talking about neighbor, our word for neighbor is Moagisani, which directly translated means a fellow builder, you know. So that word is so rich in meaning for when you say love your neighbor, you know, but embedded in the Tswana word is the assumption that you do love and work alongside with one another, if that makes sense, you know. So if I'm looking at Tswana people and I'm engaging them, and I want to tell that story, their story, and you can see it in within the kingdoms of Botswana people. There's a lot of that was assumed and put in, that God had put in place, and just the way they translated or defined neighborliness. And so when you come in as a business in that space trying to storytell, you want to unearth some of the things that God has already been doing and saying to them, listen, you have it in your language. You know, it's the same thing we use it across the, at least in the southern part of Africa, we use this word Ubuntu, Umbuntu, like, you know, different versions of that, you know, Ubuntu, like, it's a strong word, right? And so in our research and interpretation, we want to borrow from those things that God has already been working on, whether language, whether culture, whether people, and elevate that in loving, and then making sure that that story comes through.
Very well put, Sammy. Thank you. Yemi, I think Sammy's just mentioned how, you know, businesses, you know, give us an incredible live in society to bring mass change. And so sometimes we can perceive injustice as something big and out there, but injustice can also be subtle. It can be very close. It can be within our own hearts, within our own businesses. So what are some of those areas as business people that we are prone to overlooking? Some of those areas where perhaps there's injustice in our own house, as it were, that we just maybe have turning a blind eye to. And if you could share perhaps from your own experience what some of those things might be.
Thanks, Steve. I'll probably share to you from my personal experience or experiences over the years. As an HR person, right, we tend to want to play by the books, by the policies, by practices, lay down rules and regulations. So I'm not too proud to say that in a few instances, I've had to let people go out of the organization. You know, the exit process. Yes, the organization or the line managers will have taken that decision, but maybe as professionals within business, with justice, fear of God in mind, maybe we could have given second chances. Remember the story of the vineyard that was going to be burnt down, cut down, and Jesus said, no, wait another season, and let's see. Maybe it's just made bear fruit. So I see a lot of business leaders and business owners just want to, they just want to deal with issues without the humanness consideration of things, without empathy. And I think that's what I'm looking for. Businesses need to connect more with the workforce from an empathy perspective, and also even with the external stakeholders. But the point that I'm making is there will be rules, there will be regulations, there will be policies, but there is also a place for humanness, connectedness, and empathy. So as I if I have opportunities to do take some decisions now, from that perspective, I have learned a bit that I should do things a bit differently, right? That's number one. Number two, another example, I mean, sometime last year, a friend of mine got a big contract with an organization, and he invited me to be part of that job. We went to Dubai for about a week to execute that assignment, and it was good, it was fun. However, sometime this year, without her knowing, one of our clients was going to farm out an assignment, an engagement, a project, and somebody invited me to bid for that project. I was totally aware that my friend already was engaging with the client. Big oil and gas, it was going to be good money for us if we got the deal. I had started putting the job arrangement letter together. Then I remember that the company already is a client with my friend. How would it sound like that I am bidding for the same client? So I called the contact who said to me to bid, and I said, no, I won't be able to do this job. This was just about 2 weeks ago, sincerely. And I said, that is because from an integrity perspective, I don't think it's the right thing to do. It was going to be a lot of money, but I had to let it go. Because it's not every job. From a Christian perspective, we don't have to get involved in every job. She doesn't know about this till now, as we speak. I didn't pick up the phone to call her to say X, Y, Z. But she may find out later. And if I'm in a position to talk about Christ or Christianity, she will remember that experience. And, you know, like I say, action speaks louder than voice. So as I have learned a few things, from an HR perspective, I will do things differently if I need to exit people. And also, as I continue my journey on the entrepreneurship train, the fear of God, ethics, from a biblical perspective, will be my guide.
Thank you, Yemi. And guys, I'm listening to you, and I'm just thinking this whole justice business is just sounding a little bit expensive, right? Because Cynthia, you talked about how you would sometimes take on clients who can't pay. Some you charge less, some you don't charge at all. That's hitting your bottom line. Yemi, you had a delicious opportunity on your plate, which you let go. That hit your bottom line. And you guys, I guess, perhaps are in the position where it's your businesses, but perhaps there are other people who are thinking, look, I represent shareholders, you know, and how do we balance the cost of promoting social justice with making a profit, which is what businesses are meant to be doing? Sammy, let me start with you, and then I'd like to get some thoughts from you, Yemi, and Cynthia afterwards as well, as you are dishing out cash in the name of the Lord.
Yes, I think I actually think the two go hand in hand. I actually do think, even though if you look at each item in isolation, like what Yemi just said and what Cynthia is saying, it might seem like it's costly, but profit making and seeking justice in any space or society go hand in hand. If you don't, you are probably very short-term thinking. You know, there are no just, most unjust societies are very difficult spaces to make profit in. You know, it's very, and or the longevity of your profit making is shortened by injustice. You know, name any space or any, especially with extreme injustice. So something like apartheid was an extreme injustice, or something like, you know, the in Germany, for instance, or what led to the war, like fascism or whatever version of extreme injustice you see, it's not a good place to make profit. It might seem like you can make profit for a while, but it will at some point the chickens come home to roost, right? And so pursuing of justice is actually part and parcel of pursuit of profit. So in our own business, we talk about this idea, and it's born from obviously where I come from, this idea of sustainable labor producing indigenous movement. You know, what we mean is, as a business, if we are to grow, we need to find laborers or people we work alongside with in the space we're trying to work. And if it means developing those people, we have to. Now, it takes a long time. It's costly, and you might have to leave out some profit at the front. But once you have that going right and you've developed talent in the space you want to do business with, even if you were to leave that space is better off for it. If that makes sense. So a good example is right now, one of our big research spaces and a place we want to do work in is in the Bafokeng region, which is where I come from. So we're talking about how are we going to develop people in the Bafokeng region and develop the Bafokeng region as a space where they can tell their own stories and tell stories for a long time. Now, that means us being in there, finding fellow people who are trained and then training those who are untrained. And it's going to take time. But when you leave that place, you have more trained storytellers in that space who are able to tell stories, and it's better off. It's sustainable. And if they actually want to keep us there, it changes the region and actually improves our bottom line. And it will open up people's homes who want to tell more and more stories towards us. So you know, it never is. It always seems short, like it always feels like you're walking away from certain profits, but over a long time, it's not. You know, when a society welcomes you in, you're always inclined to do way better over time.
Yeah, very good point, Sammy. Thank you. Cynthia, can I hear from you on this, balancing the cost of justice with making a profit?
Yes. Remember when I shared my journey of in Uganda and now really finding God and walking with God, I also had to come and find a balance. I think I became what people would say, so spiritual. And I even got into the prophetic. And then I had to ask God, now that we've entered this deep, how do I use this in the business and still make profit? Because I believe that as a business person, my business should be found 10 times better, just like Daniel. And so I had to learn how to apply these principles. And I learned one thing is that once you have to make a choice if you're running your business according to God's system or the world's system. So now that I run my business according to God's system, I must follow God's system to the last letter or to the last T. And so God is my business, has shares in my business. Even when I'm going to give away free services, it's a decision I make with God as a shareholder. However, again, scripture tells me that I need to learn how to live well with all men, even as I am living well with God. So I also discuss with my staff, and I also discuss with, I have a shareholder. I also discuss with the shareholder. But I've come to also realize that God's system has also added advantages. It has a higher standard, but has higher advantages. I've literally, and I have practical examples, like for example, one time, God just asked me to give away everything that I had, and I gave away everything that I had. I went and I gave, especially people God told me, pastors and so on. But then God told me later on, and it was so painful, incredibly, and people told me, what you've done makes no sense. But then I began to realize that when leaders and people are coming to Kenya, they're always calling me and asking and saying, would like to come and do this. In fact, not just Kenya, in East Africa, we would like to partner with you. And I'm always asking them, how did you find my name? How do you know things about me? And I just started having favor with people that I don't even know, being mentioned in rooms that I don't even know about. And I discovered God system is very different. And then I asked God, and he told me, you now man the gates of your nation and of East Africa. That is something that the business world can never give me, even if I worked 100 times hard, but it is something in the spiritual realm, if I walk in faith, and in God's system and obeyed him that God gives me. And so I've come to realize, even in ministry, because I also have a ministry, that men and women of God from various nations come to seek me when they want to do anything in East Africa. And so it's a complete walk of faith. But also I remember, as I read scripture, all the men that we see God calling, they had skills. Joseph had skills. Moses had skills. I also work on my skills. When I look at how the tabernacle in Exodus was being built by God, one of the most spectacular makeshift buildings ever, God chose men who had skills. And then what he did for them, because they had the skills, he put in his special anointing for that assignment. So that is what I am also learning to balance and do, but to completely obey and do things according to God's system. And it has truly worked for my business.
Wow, what a great testimony. Yemi, as I ask you the same question, I'm going to just dovetail it with the final question, which, if I can get a quick response from all of you, would be great. And really, just by way of landing this discussion, what are the consequences for society when Christian business leaders neglect these matters of justice? So you can comment on the balancing profit and the cost of social justice, but then also just maybe throw in there the consequences. What happens if we all walk away and say, you know what, this is too hard, it's too costly, no thanks?
All right. So, well, I mean, after Sunny and Cynthia, I'm not sure what to add to the lovely contributions, but let me just say that I wouldn't see it as a loss if we seek justice and not concentrate on profit. It's not a loss. In the immediate term, like Sammy said, it might look like a loss, but what we need to do is to realign the balance sheet, because ultimately it will come back to us if we follow biblical standard. I mean, no one has ever followed God's way and has been an ultimate loser. I mean, it's just not going to happen. And also, from a very long-term perspective, not just within the context of our existence here, right? If what will he profit a man if he gains the whole world, right? And then loses his soul. What really is the goal for all of us? It's heaven, isn't it? Even if you don't make enough money like many people around us, but we follow biblical standards, at the end of the day, we gain ultimately by making heaven, right? That'll be my little contribution to that. And to say, what's the consequence? Injustice in the world, no peace in the world, the social degradation that we see right now. There will be few rich people, but they're not peaceful. I mean, if everybody is a great business person without doing business with justice, and you're in traffic, you've neglected so many individuals, right? They're waiting for you on the road to attack you in traffic. If we all have that consciousness, say, let's spread the wealth of the world through seeking ethical standards, number one, biblical standards, number two, we are likely to close the huge gap that exists right now in our societies. And who's going to benefit? We are all going to be beneficiaries of it.
Very good. Thank you. Cynthia, your last word. What's at stake if, as business leaders, we don't take this charge seriously? And then, Sammy, I'll land with you. Thank you.
A lot. A lot is at stake. And eventually we will find that we have no businesses to run. We'll find that, and we can see this in the US, that a whole culture has been eroded, and so it brings chaos in every area of our life. Our children are not safe to go to school. We have to have gun controls and so on. So it erodes. Our churches are not safe to go to. There are no churches anymore. Every area of our life will be affected. And one of the things that I have come to learn is that if we allow the systems of man to work, they're quite powerful. We saw God take down Babel because he could see, yes, the system of man could work, but it was not sustainable. And that is the thing we need to ask ourselves. This system that we have right now, are they sustainable? How come other areas of our lives are not working? Yes, one area, it looks like our economies, yes, might be working, but our families are not working out. Our schools are not working out. We need to teach people why the systems work, why godly systems work, because when they work, every area of our life begins to work. And so that's, I've become in the place of work. That's the gospel that I am teaching. And I would like to humbly ask, even as we come to an end, that if there could be more conversations like this, maybe even longer conversations like this, and really paint the picture of what it would look like if this was a world of justice and godly justice and accepting the systems of God.
Amen. Thank you. Sammy, what's at stake?
Yeah, I think future generations sadly have to pay. It always is the case. Even if you don't fully pay in your generation, the future generations always pay. So if you start at the most minute of in God's economy, the family, you know, if a guy doesn't do what is right by a girl and says we don't build the family the way God intended for it, you have children who grow up without fathers, you know, you have broken homes, you have future generations pay. I come from, like I said, the Royal Buffalo King people and I just think it's because of God's faithfulness and sending, allowing our kings of the past. I think that the king at that time was Kgosi Mokgatle to make a massive decision for people. There was an injustice in the space. We had lost our land, but the men, our great-great-grandfathers, went to the mines and some worked to the farms, bought back the land through the missionary who lived by Royal Buffalo King. And that's why we're one of the richest nations on the continent. You know, we got fortunate that we found platinum at the land that was bought back by our grandfathers, but we don't have to pay. Matter of fact, we can. So the other side of it is, if you don't pursue justice, the future nations have to pay. But if you do, there's future benefits for the family. Now think about families whose 4 or 5 generations of my grandfather with my grandmother, you know, families or where you see my dad love my mom, you know, what that looks like, what the benefit is that for the family. Like, always where injustice reigns, future nations pay. But opposite
is so much.
On the other side, future nations are blessed if you pursue it. You know, yeah.
Thank you to our three panelists. It's such wonderful responses to those questions. We're going to go to questions from our audience. And I'll just throw these out unless they're specifically aimed at you, in which case I'll let you know. And if we can just answer them as concisely as we can, I'd really love to honor those who've asked questions and at least give them something to walk away with. First one is, I can't help but think of Paul's letter to Timothy, 2 Timothy 3:12. Indeed, all who desire to live a godly life in Christ will be persecuted. Is a measure of persecution in standing for justice an indicator of impact? In other words, the more we're does it show that actually, or maybe to put it another way, if we're not experiencing any impact, should we be questioning ourselves as to whether we're actually challenging justice in the workplace?
I don't think it always works quite like that, Sibs. I do think, you know, like there are times when it will be like that, and probably when you're working in an extremely unjust space, there will be pushback, you know, about what you do. So I can imagine in an organization, if the organization has found a way to make money in an unjust way for a long, long time, to change those systems is incredibly difficult. You know, it's incredibly difficult. But it changes, obviously, in a more just space. If you continue to pursue justice, it won't be as difficult to operate. And so you can still have, sometimes when you have it good, and I think the US is a good example, when you've come from a history that your great, great, great grandparents have done a good deal of justice, I mean, there'll always be injustice in one way or another, you take for granted the good things that you see. You know, it's the Christian testimony of a person who says, yeah, I grew up in a Christian home, you know, I didn't really experience heartbreak, or I don't have the testimony that, you know, the testimony of I was a thug and I was got arrested and in jail. I mean, so you sometimes tend to think, yeah, my testimony is not so great. And it's like, no, that's a great testimony, you know, of a lot of justice. You don't need heavy, but in heavy spaces where there's been a lot of injustice, it tends to be, you get a lot more pushback, you know. But in the spaces where there has been generally a lot of justice in that space, it's not so hard to keep doing the right things. And the goal there is to keep doing the right things. You know, if you've got an organization like Mergon, for instance, is born of great history. You know, the challenge for anybody at Mergon is to keep going. You know, you can't say, oh yeah, we take this for granted because, you know, it's great here. You know, like there's a space where we can talk about God, we can be discipled, we can grow in our faith, and then we can actually take ideas on a business level to the continent and use business as a leverage to actually make an impact. So Mergon in the space won't get impact, but maybe if you land in South Sudan, it might be a little bit different, you know?
Yeah. And I think I'd just say to that. Yeah, go ahead, Cynthia.
If I could just add something and say, one thing I've learned about just in injustice is that anywhere you see injustice, never assume that it just happened. It's a coincidence. Injustice is always planned for. Somebody sat and thought through the system. And that's sometimes the mistake that we make. We take injustice so lightly and we don't realize that someone actually or a team sat through it. And we always even talk about corruption and how to fight corruption. And we think it's as easy as putting up new laws without realizing that people actually took time and thought through that system. And also for us, when we're beginning to fight against injustice, we have to sit through it and not just assume, oh, I'm saved. I have God on my side. I'm going to go fight injustice because God is with me. It has to take a lot of prayer, but also strategy to think it through, to understand the problem, and then have a clear way of fighting that injustice. And we see this in Exodus chapter 1, where the children of Israel are slaves. If you read the first few verses, you see Pharaoh saying that the children of Israel are growing, they are stronger, they are getting better than us, they can overtake our nation. So he sat down and thought, how can I come up with a system that is going to overtake and override the stronger people? And that's what injustice does. Someone thinks through and says, I am weaker. How can I come up with a system to take over the stronger ones and control the stronger ones? So he came up with a slavery system to ensure that this country, nation that had the potential to take over Egypt, would work as their slaves. And so sometimes we can take injustice so lightly and not understand it is systematic. It is something that we really have to think through even when we go against it. And that's why sometimes it can be so painful when we're going against it, because we have also not planned well for it. But certainly you also have to be bold and courageous. Sometimes it can bite back because it's a whole system in itself and sometimes has even much more money and brains than you do. So sometimes it will fight back so badly. So that would be my take.
Okay, since if I could just say quickly, though, that it's not every individual facing opposition because of impact or leading change that's a Christian. So we have many people who are change agents and trying to change the course of events in societies. And they don't necessarily have to be Christian. They're making impact and they're facing opposition and persecution, so to speak. So opposition or persecution, not necessarily because we're making impact, number one. And there are other people who are making impact and facing opposition and persecution and are not necessarily Christians within the society. Just to make that dichotomy quickly.
Very good. Thank you. I'll move on to the second question, which is someone who's talking about an environment that is presumed to be Christian, like a Christian organization or people who say this is a Christian business, where it's assumed or presumed that there are just practices. Question is, what resources and skills are available for someone who would like to foster these practices when you're in an environment that assumes that those are in place, but actually you are seeing a lot of those blind spots and seeing a lot of injustice? And I think we can all relate to that in some shape or form. Any takers on that one?
I think if I could quickly say something on that, we shouldn't think that running a business is just strictly on biblical principles. So I am also aware within our environment here of many business leaders who are also Christian leaders running businesses and trying to bring in biblical principles. However, the fundamentals of running a business are lacking. So let's not forget the place of leadership fundamentals. Let's not forget the place of strategy and managing a business and thinking just by the fact that we're Christians, we can't run a business based on biblical principles. It should be complementary. Understanding how to manage business, understanding how to lead and manage people, and then understanding how to do all of that based on biblical principles will be critical success factors rather than just thinking biblical principles and I will be successful. At times, it just doesn't work.
I mean, a big example I've seen of this in my own experience is in the HR space, whereas Christians will say, well, we're all family, you know, so there's no need for contracts and, you know, binding this and binding that. You know, we love Jesus, we're all serving him. And I have seen incredible abuse in the name of Christian family. And so I guess the question would be, how do you even begin to address things like that? And is there anything that can help us to address that in the workplace?
I do think so. It's like, so and probably jumping on to your also previous question is, when you're in any space, you have to assume and always work. And I mean, I think as a Christian, it's important to take an attitude of always pruning, you know, always working your garden, always. So you're going to have to, I think when Paul writes to Timothy about calling in 2 Timothy, he reminds him that fulfilling your calling is like being an athlete, being a soldier and being a farmer. It's hard work. You know, so no matter what space you're in, even if the space that you find yourself in is supposedly a great space, it probably is. It can get worse, but you have to also do your work, you know, and maybe you have to work hard. If you see blind spots, it's for you. You were put in that place for such a time as that. You know, work on those blind spots. Help the business realize that, hey, we might not be seeing this as a business, it might not be an intention of the business to have missed it. It might not have been a big thing when their business was that size. You know, businesses grow as well, and growth comes with its own stresses. You know, so injustice might not be from a result of actually just planned. It might be just something that you are now put there to observe and then inform and then help make decisions. So, I mean, I think Joshua does a good job of it to the children of Israel, right? Like at the end of his life, he's been running this nation, and it's tough as nails at the end. And it's so bad that he even says, listen, you guys choose who you want to serve, right? Choose you this day who you want to serve. But as for me and my house, we're going to serve. I can only take care of my house. Everybody has to make that decision. You know what I mean? Like, so all of us are responsible. So what Joshua is pretty much saying is like, we're all responsible for our place in how this nation develops, you know? And the first base starts with our family and then our businesses. I think what DM is saying is so true. We have to know and be knowledgeable and understand how to grow businesses as well, understand the tools that we need. And I think that don't take that for granted. You know, what does it look like to be a good business leader, to report, to be transparent, report to the people who give you money, you know, like all of that we need to be. But that you should do that as a Christian, if that makes sense. You know, so but anyway,
Yeah. Thanks, Sammy. So Cynthia, I want to come to you because I will cut you off because there's a question directed to you. So in the last 5 minutes, I'll just want to deal with two questions. One to you, Cynthia, and then the final one, Yemi, I'll address to you. So Cynthia, someone says, I love your purpose, where God called you. My daughter is studying criminology first year. How can I guide her to think more in line with God's kingdom, not in the world system? She feels that no one wants to do this type of work.
Yes, quite challenging. I worked in police for a few number of years, where you would expect justice to be there, and then you find there is actually man's justice. But I think first of all, for her to have the confidence that God called her into that system, because God knows that she can handle. I think it's also very good to have also mentors, people who've probably been in that space. And have mentors, yes, who some are born again, some who are not born again, and learn from them. But also one of the things I've come to realize as a child of God in the business space or even in criminology is that one of the ways to bypass some of these systems is to be the best ever. Make sure that in your studies, you're the number one student. Make sure that even when people are going out to work, that you're the best. And so people begin to see that, yes, maybe even though you're doing things a bit different, just like Daniel, if you're found 10 times better, there's a way people really begin to respect your views and even your godly views. I think even as for all of us, that's one thing that we must really learn, is that the systems must be different. But if we can give results that are 10 times better, then people will begin to listen and engage with us even more.
Well said. Yemi, I'll direct the final question to you. And it's really dealing with, I guess, in some ways linked to the persecution question, is that when we do live a godly life, when we do stand up against injustice, we can find ourselves sidelined. And sometimes it's in the context where you're an entrepreneur, and maybe you don't get the deals that you maybe should have gotten, maybe because even if you have the best price or best offering, or maybe you're an employee and you're in an organization and you feel powerless to change the systems as a whole. But you find that as you stand up against injustice, you find that there are repercussions, and you may be sidelined for promotion, et cetera. How do we process that as believers? And maybe we could just have that as our closing thought.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. It's always going to be uncomfortable. For instance, you are not playing politics within the organization. You are not sucking up to anyone, because it's appraisal time, and therefore year after year, you are passed by on promotion. It's always going to be difficult. But again, like we said, trying to change to fit into the world system will be short-termism because of what you're going to get. The promotion is so short-term. So what do you lose? I think it's an opportunity to continue to count the opportunity cost, right? What is it going to cost you to remain on the path of integrity, God's ways, doing things right? And if you're so focused on the promotion and the money, you are likely to compromise. And compromise is in God's ways. So if you don't compromise, and I have also found out that, yes, it might take a while, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, but when God is ready to now repay you or reward you for your consistency, it almost looks like it doubles all the years you seem to have lost. So it's to look at things from a short-term perspective and know that, hey, you're going through this path because God is taking you somewhere. But I admit, it's never going to be easy to either miss that promotion or lose a business deal because you are staying on the right path. Never going to be easy. But hey, since the kingdom of God is easy.
Thank you, Yemi. Thank you, Cynthia. And thank you, Sammy, for your outstanding input. Thank you to those of you who've tuned in as well. Thank you for the questions and engaging. And I will now hand back over to Kerry. Thanks so much, Kerry.
And so what I was speaking about was a speaker that was with us in Rwanda. And he said one of the gifts that we actually have on our continent that we don't talk about is that we weren't We're in the process of being modernized. We haven't been modernized to the degree that places like the US have. And so we can learn. So just as Cynthia said, we can actually see where things haven't worked in the way that society has been built. And so what an incredible opportunity we have to build our societies in a way that have biblical principles at their roots, but also excellence in the way that we engage as business leaders, knowing that we need to be masters of our craft and understanding how to run business, do business, be in line with governance and law, but also underpin it all with biblical principles so that we can truly live out a way that is pleasing to God and will unlock the flourishing of his people and have that generational blessing that Sammy was talking about. So thank you so much for that. So if you're wanting to join in any more discussions with us, we encourage you. We have groups of business leaders who connect together throughout the week. They meet for about 12 sessions just to grapple through things together. They're called our business exchanges, and we have community leaders that run them or exchange leaders that run them. And so we encourage you to drop us a message. There's a link in the chat where you can actually sign up for one of these groups, where you can have more of these kinds of discussions with peers, other business leaders who are grappling with these kinds of topics. Then for those of you that enjoyed today's session, there's actually a whole resource. So there's a booklet that you can read around just the theology behind some of the thinking of business and justice. It's been written by a couple of business leaders giving their inputs and their thoughts, backed by Sibs, actually, who's been very instrumental in writing this resource with us. And then we have podcasts. So if you don't want to read the book, you can read the book and listen to the podcast. There's an incredible podcast channel, which many of our panel members that were on today were actually part of the podcast. So you can go listen to more of their story, more of their journey as they've had revelations around how to live out this concept of justice, biblical justice, in the work that they do. And then there's also a whole lot of articles. So I encourage you to go to our website. There's a knowledge hub on our website that has incredible insights from different business leaders. There's testimony stories, there's blogs, there's articles, there's previous At the Lakes. If you've enjoyed this one, it's been your first, you can go back and watch some of our previous At the Lakes on other big topics that we've tackled together. So please go have a look. And feel free to engage and send us messages if there's topics that you'd love us to cover. And this really is content that's coming from business leaders on our continent who are struggling with the same, grappling with the same things, have the same vision for our continent, and that God's got great plans and has been doing great things for a very long time. And then lastly, we have our East Africa Connect, or we have Connect events coming up. This is the community that is currently engaged with Zwani. So business leaders across the continent who are busy together, meeting groups, praying together. There's all sorts of different activities. So again, drop us a note if you want to know what all the different ways you can plug in, what's available. But all of these people that are plugged in different fashions and forms actually come together once a year in a regional Connect event. And so we have some coming up in August. So we want you to stay the date. In South Africa, we have on the 23rd in Gauteng, and the 25th in the Western Cape. And then we also have regional connects in Tanzania and Uganda. And those are coming up in September, the beginning of September, that first week of September. I think we're still possibly finalizing those dates. So please keep an eye, sign up for our newsletter, sign up to join one of our WhatsApp groups so that you are. So that you know where we are going and what's happening next, so that you can be part of more of these discussions. So thank you very, very much for being part of today. We believe in excellence, and we believe in feedback. And so we would love to hear from you. There's a link that will be placed in the chat function. Please click on it and complete the survey. It's a really quick survey. It's just to ask you some questions around today. How you found the event, if there's ways that we can improve, but also to hear from you on what stood out from you, what other topics you'd love us to cover in future, or any other thoughts. Do you think we should have, what should come of this? As Cynthia said, there could be multiple more conversations. And so if you would like to suggest something, if you have something that you feel God stirred in your heart, please do share it with us on that form. But again, thank you for joining us. It was wonderful to have all of you with us. Thank you to our panel again. You were incredible. We really, really appreciate you just sharing your years of wisdom and insight, and just your passion for seeing justice in the marketplace. Thank you again. And Sibs, thank you for hosting our panel so, so efficiently and so lovingly today. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. Ziwani is a Mergon initiative. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.